song. Is it?
Anyway. Hello, and welcome to Whose Song Is It Anyway? I'm Dr. Hayley Bosher, and for this special season of the podcast, focusing on women in the music industry, I'll be your host.
Hi, Charisse. Thanks for coming on the Whose Song Is It Anyway podcast today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Lovely to be here. It's a long time coming, isn't it? We should have scheduled this a while ago, so I'm glad that we finally done it.
I'm here. It's one of those things, though, that I feel like I'm so glad that you're doing it now, because I feel like when we tried to do it before, we would have been talking about different things, and actually you're perfect for this, the focus of this season. So I can't wait to pick your brains about these things. But anyway, before we get into all of that, for the listeners, can you tell them who you are and what you do in the music industry?
So my name is Charisse Beaumont. I am chief exec at Black Lives in Music. We are a research and advocacy organisation. What we do, we advocate for Black music creators and industry professionals in the music industry using our research and our advocacy. We currently have partnered with 90 organisations where we roll out our, if you would, our inclusive practice work. And we've published two reports. One of them is Being Black in the UK Music Industry, which has just been a phenomenon and really made some waves, and we're really grateful for the voices that contributed to that. So yeah, that's us, and yeah, great work.
Yeah, don't worry, I'll be putting links to everything we talk about so people can come and find you if they don't already know about the organisation and the reports, which I think are really powerful and insightful, and I would really encourage anyone listening to this to check out that research, because I think what you're doing is so necessary. And like bringing those insights, we talked about this before, and actually I mentioned in a lot of this podcast episodes that like we know these things are happening, but sometimes having it on paper, this data that we can point to, is a springboard for change, because you can be like, look, this isn't working, here's a strategy to fix it, and then we can review, is the data improving, so it's like kind of validating, and also at the same time can be the starting point of progression and change. So yeah, absolutely. Big plug.
No, absolutely. I think that's one of the reasons why we did that. You know, Black people have been gaslighted, and I'm not going on a soapbox now, but gaslighted for over 400 years. We've been saying this is happening to us, and we're sharing our experience when we've been brave to do so, and nothing's happened. So, you know, with Black Lives in Music, we were founded after the resurgence of the new resurgence of the civil rights movement, which happened after the murder of George Floyd. And all of these organizations like, what should we do? What should we do? Knee-jerk reaction. And we were like, you know what? We need some data. We need some data on a lived experience. Because just like you said, it's that data, for some reason, people understand, they get insights. We can actually use that and make some changes. So after we published a report, which, you know, show that racism is prevalent in the UK music industry, which we all knew anyway.
Yeah, big plot twist.
But it's on paper now.
Yeah.
You know, we met with we published a report in October. In November, we met with over 90 organisations, MDs, CEOs, just the leaders of organisations, all of the top organisations, Spotify, UK Music, everybody. And, you know, we went through the report, and we came out of a consensus, an idea, which was that industry-wide anti-racism code of conduct. Now, the only reason why I'm mentioning that is because of what you said. That's the power of data, but that's the power of stories. When you hear the real stories of what people are actually going through, that should compel you to do something. So having it on paper, seeing those recommendations, coming together, working together to come up with an idea for change together is the most important thing. And that is, it's just been an absolute privilege to be a part of that and lead on that, if you would.
Thank you for sharing that, because I think that exactly as you said, it really illustrates that point of how helpful the data can be, especially when it's in some ways frustrating. Like you said, like, why do I need a study to show something that we all know is happening? But if we just, you know, put that to the side for a minute, we can see that it's effective. And so it's kind of like, yes, it is frustrating that we need to do that in order to progress, but at the same time, it's a really effective tool. And so it's important, I think, to get involved with these things. You know, if there's a survey, answer it. If there's, you know, UK Music and Help Musicians are doing a census, you know, respond to those kind of things, get engaged with data collection and share, like you said, stories, which can be really hard, of course, and it's easier said than done. But sharing those stories and collecting those stories can really help move things forward. So yeah, thank you. That's a really, really good example. And I'm glad that we've already got, get on the soapbox. We're already on it.
Our toes on the soapbox.
We're about to we're ready. It's coming.
Bunk up now and go. Yeah. No, you're 100% right in regards to data. You know, one of the things is we knew the reason, one of the reasons, the main reason why we did the data is because that data did not exist. There's no data on Black people in music in, you know, prior to what we did. Can you believe that in 2021 at the time, you know, zero data on Black people. We're the ones who contribute the most to the music industry, dare I say. And we, yet there was nothing on us, no students, not in education, across the board. Nothing. So we created the first data set on Black people in the music industry.
That's wild.
There's a lot of firsts in our work, you know? You know, it's not, it just goes to show that number one, it can be done. Number two, we can enforce change. But number three, we need to really communicate the importance today of data and how it can make change within our community. I think I understand why data hasn't been collected in the past amongst our own. But at the same time, I still am shocked that we created the first, you know?
Yeah.
Did people not care enough about us, you know? No matter how much we contributed, no matter, you know, are we just part of a melting pot and is there a great divide in terms of BAME and then everybody else? And so that is something has to change. We have our experience of, and our experience needs to be heard.
Absolutely. I think it honestly blows my mind when I hear things. So, you know, it says that there's a lot of firsts and like doing more research into this area for the season about women's experience in more broadly as well in the music industry. There are so many firsts. And I actually came to the conclusion from doing the season, it's not that hard to be a pioneering woman in music because there aren't fucking anybody there. And like then for Black women in music, like, yeah, you're the first a lot of the time to be doing certain things because it's not happening enough before. And sometimes when you hear things, oh, this is the first Black woman to be nominated for this award. Like, what the fuck?
Like, in 2023, we're still seeing the first. I'm like, why are we still seeing the first Black woman? Are you not embarrassed? Like, what is it? Like, no, totally. And, but the thing is, it's a damn shame because you can see we've been working from the beginning of time. So we'd like, say, for example, you know, the first Black woman to be nominated for an Oscar. But look how long we've been in films. I was sharing because we're doing a film series, a training series that we're going to roll out, an anti-racism training series that we're rolling out across the creative industries. And I was just before this podcast, we had a call about it. And, you know, we were saying that all of the stories happened at Windrush. For some reason, you know, Black music came here on Windrush. And we're like, that's not true. We've been here since the 15th century, even prior to slavery. We were here, imported, created music, you know, bringing music to these shores. Why is that not acknowledged? Why are we only seeing the ripple effects hundreds of years later? Why are we always having to break the mold? And I don't know, it's just that perception that needs to change, to be honest. You know, that history, our stories need to be told. And that's why Black Lives in Music, we say what we are on the tin. Our stories need to be told, especially when it comes to Black women. Because as you know, our findings from our data show that, you know, Black women are the most disadvantaged in the UK music industry. That explains the firsts, doesn't it? So that's something that we need to change.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to talk about the pressure, actually, of being the first. Because it's, in some ways, I'm like, when I say it's not that hard to be the first, I don't mean it's an easy thing to do. Like, it's obviously an incredibly difficult thing to do to break through, to be the first woman. I mean that, like, there's so little women and Black women doing certain things that then it's not that surprising. Do you know what I mean? So I just want to clarify, I'm not saying it's easy. I actually think it's the opposite. there's a lot of pressure, and you feel that from a personal perspective and also from a collective perspective. All the women I've spoke to on this podcast have expressed feeling a big sense of responsibility, which can be so motivating, but also absolutely terrifying, and lead to overworking, too much pressure, all that kind of thing. Like, how do you feel about that?
That, I actually have a tear in my eye. I'm welling up a little bit.
Aww.
I know it because of the data. I know it because I hear other women say it. But to hear that you've had women on this incredible podcast say the same thing that I feel every day is, yeah, I want to say it's crazy, but I'll use a proper term, which is it's overwhelming, because it does feel like a huge sense of responsibility. It's great, exhilarating if you're that way inclined, which I am, quite ambitious, quite results driven. So I'm going to get to the end, whether I like it or not. So it's part of my DNA. But the weight, the stress, when I think about what I'm a mother, I have two babies, I have two children, a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old. And if this is an audio, that's my 6-year-old, he's 2 in that picture. And balance, I'm married, and I have a great support network, so that's not the issue. But to juggle it all, to balance it all, is flipping hard. I want to swear. It's,
you can. You be hard. Open. I already said what the fuck, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I'm not going to lie to you. It's hard. And the thing is, we've got to put on a persona like we're strong.
Mm.
You know, we were just talking prior to this about going into parliament and doing all this work. So we have to like look like we've got it all together, do podcasts, and we've got it all together. When actually, you know, if I be real, there was times I had to get a therapist last year.
Mate, I'm in therapy. I love therapy. There's
but
you've got to do it.
You know, I had to do it. I was reading these stories of these people going through their rate, and it was getting to me. It was heartbreaking. And so you're taking on the responsibility of that. You're absorbing stories and seeing microaggressions and experiencing bullying and harassment. I'm talking for myself. This is me experiencing it, hearing things, stupidness in my head, and still having to fight and raise your family and nurture your home and be there. Exhausting's not the worst. Exhausting's not the worst. I burn out. This is, people are only seeing me peak my head. November, I cut off, and I just only started getting better a few weeks ago. Well, a week ago, first couple of weeks in January. A good 2 months it took me to get myself together. And that, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, if I do flip it, I know I'm not alone, because like I said, I see it in the data. I see women say they have to work 3 jobs just to make ends meet. Black women have to work 3 jobs just to make ends meet in the music industry. You know, we're not able just to have our 9-to-5. We've got to be a manager. We've got to be an A&R. We've got to be touring. And you might have a family at home as well. If that's even, you know, it's the same with me. I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm built like this. But I'm also a mother and everything else. It's a lot. Women, and I know I'm not the only one, but women, we are made to shoulder it all. And I could go deep, so you can edit this out. But, you know, this isn't Black women, yes, in the music industry, yes, this is what I'm about. But women in general, you know, no matter what culture you see it, you know, I've lived in Nepal. That's the top of the world, you know, the poorest women having to get up at the crack of dawn, put the things on their head that go out and work, come home, raise their children, bathe their children, cook everything else while their drunk husband's sitting there. And that's like 9 times out of 10. Sorry if you're Nepali. And but I've seen it. And then, I do my school run and I'm part of the PTA. I'm part of the PTA. Listen, we do this. I'm a mum.
Do everything.
We do everything. I'm part of the PTA and they're going through it, you know? But as a Black woman, you're going through it extra worse because there's no breakthrough for us. There's no access. That's why we're the first of in the 21st century, because we're having to fight hard off the backs of those who went before us, who had to fight hard. You know, it's really difficult. So as much as I'm putting it as a melting pot, as women, yeah, we are going through. This is what we do. But as Black women, the opportunities are far fewer for us. So it's harder. And yeah, sorry, that's my rant. Was that? Was
it? No, it was
real. It's so real.
It was real. And I honestly thank you for being so open and vulnerable, because I know from the conversations I've already been having, and I hear you, and there will be women listening to this who will also have tears in their eyes listening to you say, look, it's f***ing hard. Because we have this, like, I'm obviously speaking from the perspective of women and not as a Black woman, I can kind of learn and hear from you what it's like, but I'm not, you know, trying to say I know what that's like, because I don't. I talked about it with another guest, it's like carrying baggages, and like, as a woman, I've got one bag, and as a Black woman, you have two heavy bags. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, can to a certain extent understand your experience and obviously listen and empathize, but I don't really know the struggle. But I think it's so important for all of us to acknowledge when it's really hard and be open and honest about that, because for all of us, there is this sense of do everything, be everything to everyone, and fucking look good doing it. Look put together. Look like you've got your shit together. Sound like you've shit together. Like, don't you dare have a fucking meltdown. And especially as a Black woman, because if you lose your shit, you also have this societal perception of like, Black woman's losing it. Do you know what I mean?
It's almost like, I'll be honest with you, Hayley, it's almost like people want to draw you into that as well. Like, for me, by nature, I'm quite, you know, I'm passionate. That's a really nice one. Well done, Charisse. You're passionate.
You are, and yeah.
So if something happens, I express that passion. But I feel like sometimes it's almost like they're looking for trigger points to see how you're going to react. It's really strange. Like, I'm like, why would you say that to me? Why, like, in your mind, do you think that even, would you say that to your, why would you say that to me? This, the stuff that's been said to me. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have to bear it. Black men have to bear it. I know this is about a podcast, but, you know, what Black men have to bear is a lot too, you know? Yeah, you might see them in higher positions, if you would, in the music industries, and more, a little bit more opportunities than, say, a Black woman. But the stuff that they're holding back on, so they're not perceived as, I don't know, aggressive or whatever, you know, is and I don't want to speak out of turn, so, but, you know, it's a lot. They're holding a lot. And
yeah.
It's so when you're saying that perception that you can't even be your authentic self, which is something that, you know, as Black Lives in Music, we are really pushing for authenticity, that that someone can be themselves. Where our code of conduct even speaks about that. Being able to speak like me, like, I'm, you know, South London, I can't change the way I speak. This is how I speak. So I'm not going to be put on an accent for anyone. This is me. But I'm still able, like, let me be me. If someone wants to come in with dreads and plaits in their hair and whatever, or Black woman wants to wear her big afro, let her wear her afro. You know, let us be us. Let us be authentic. And we don't even get that. Let us make the music we want to make. We don't even get to make the music we want to make, Hayley. You know this. We've talked about this. You know, boxed in into genres. Authenticity is so important. And it's something that we should champion. You know, this is our culture. You know, this is who we are as people. Let us be authentic. So, yeah.
No, I think it's really important. And actually, what you said is, we're just contextualizing the conversation that we have, that this is like a big society thing. It's not just in the music industry. It's not just women. We have to think about it in an intersectional way. And also, I think what you're saying, what you're speaking to about being authentic, really is about creating environments of inclusion. Whoever you are, you can show up as you, and you won't be judged or penalized for that. What I was thinking about when you were talking just then is, I saw in the news recently about a young Black girl being like expelled from school or something for having her hairstyle in a certain way. And I was just like, this is absurd. This is infuriating. That, can you as a Black person wear your hair the same as me as a white person? No, you fucking can't. Like, your hair is different. And you're saying to this girl, she can't come to school with her hair in a way that's like, not even just there's obviously the cultural and level she wants to, that's how she wants to wear her hair, cool, but also like her hair's different, for fuck's sake. Like, I just, it makes me so angry, I can't even breathe. And so it's at all levels. And and I know that's not even in the music industry, that's in school, but that's in a school in England. This girl is being taught from that age, you can't be yourself, you can't wear your hair how you want to wear your hair, that is important to you in a cultural perspective, and also because that's how your hair is, if you've, do you know what I mean? And then this is what we're fighting against. This is why it's hard, because then for the rest of her life, that girl is going to go through being like, oh, I can't wear my hair how I want to wear my hair. It's not acceptable.
See, then we're not even speaking about, you're hitting the nail on the head. Like, I'm coming from an overall cultural perspective. But if you individualize that, you know, that girl now has insecurities about who she is as a person, you know, as she goes, when she grows up and goes to work and gets into a relationship or what have not, what, you know, she can't be herself. You've now put a barrier in front of her about who she is, you know, about her blackness, that side that is her. That is why it needs to be eradicated. We need to get out. And you know what you said is in every aspect of society, but look, it's happening from school age. Not even when she's not even grown up yet. So she's already been penalized and experienced racism, overt racism at school age, and been told it's not all right for you to be like this, so get out of the school, basically. Come on.
And what I find so traumatizing for her about it is not, like you've just said, that it's the overt racism that's also structural. Not one person who works in that f***ing school has said this is not right. Like, you're a bunch of adults telling this kid that she can't be herself, and yeah, being overtly racist, and you're telling me nobody, not one person in that school is like, actually, this is not cool, we should let the kids wear their hair how they want. Like, it's that do you know what I mean? So like, because I've never experienced racism. I'm really careful with my words to be like, I want everyone to know that I get that I'm a white person. But it, like, say with bullying, it's like if somebody is racist towards you, or somebody is, there's the individual experience with that one person that's obviously unacceptable. But then there's this like layer with stuff like this. It's a really good example to illustrate like the structural racism, because the school is an organization and lots of people work there. So it's like her experiences, not just like that one person has been racist towards me and says I'm unacceptable. Yeah. The entire educational f-ing system in this country is racist.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Who's letting them do this? Do you know what I mean? Who's
letting them? It's
stop it.
And this is what needs, and we are a multicultural society, whether we like it or not, you know, and we need to learn to embrace and love and show kindness to one another. And we say that all fluffy, like it's a Gap advert or something like that. But come on, it's basic. It's actually basic, you know. Look at that girl. What is going through your mind when you think it's all right to strip search a 15-year-old in school grounds, and she's on her period, and she's on what planet? And you think she's going to come out all right after that?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And this is what we are talking about here. This is, and you're saying it's structural. Yes, it is. It's structural racism. The UN just published a report the other day saying, you know, the UK structurally racist, the police system structurally racist. And the first thing the government did is just deny. No, no, we're not. Wait a minute. Have you read the report? Have you acknowledged that any wrongdoing? What have you done to change? You know, black people have been fighting for, and I'm not going to go too much into this, but been fighting for justice in terms of the police system for years. And, you know, we're only getting looked at now because of some other aspects of are happening. It's not fair. It's not fair. And this is what we have to go through. And it is structural. And the music industry, as much as we love it, it's horrid. It's horrid. And I know that because of our report and our data. I know it because I've lived it and I've experienced it. And it's not nice. It's not a place where everyone can thrive, you know? It's not. Nepotism, barriers to progression, access and opportunities for people, black people, people of colour, you know? And just like you said, from such an early age. We don't get access into the music industry the way others do. You know, I was explaining, we're doing a scholarship with Oxford University. And they were like, how did you get into the music industry? And I'm like, my pathway was unorthodox. But to be honest, majority of our pathways are unorthodox. We don't get the same route as everybody else. We don't get to study and then get a job and then work our way up. We study, we might, if we're lucky in this day and age, might get an internship, and it kind of fizzles out after that, and we have to find our own way, you know. And it's just not fair, you know. And that's basic, putting it in a basic way, but, you know, without going into detail, it's not fair. I want to say the structure is against us, and I feel comfortable saying that.
I think it's accurate, yeah, you know, isn't it?
It's actually against us, and that's something that we need to look at and work on and do something about.
Yeah, well, and I think the thing with structural issues like structural racism is that there's not a quick fix, because it's not like, so if it's an individual racist person, you deal with that individual. When it's structural, it's a group of individuals, but it's also the system and the way that it's organized around. And I always use the example when if people don't really, because it's so vague, sometimes people don't know what it means, and I'm sure you can explain much better than me, but for things that we don't ever think about that are like structurally not designed to be inclusive, even when you think that they are. A really good example is like toilets. You know, when you go to a club or a bar or restaurant, there's always a queue at the women's toilets and there's not a queue at the men's toilets. And you think, oh, what's that? Because women just take longer. No, because the toilets were designed, the architects are men. So they designed the toilets for the male needs. You know, even kitchens in the UK, They're built around the average height of a man. Well, according to your patriarchy, the women's in the fucking kitchen, so that doesn't even make any sense. Do you know what I mean? So it's just an example of saying, like, when we don't always reflect on these things about how certain things end up looking a certain way, because, you know, it's just how it is. We just accept, we walk into a room, this is how that room is. But that's, even a space can be built in a way that's not inclusive when you really reflect on it. And that is essentially our entire society. And like you said, with the police, you can't point to it. This is why the data is helpful, because without it, it's like this vague kind of, we know that racist things are happening, we know that there are barriers there, but it's not just like, oh, we can just build a bridge here and everything's fine. You have to tear down the entire fucking structure and build this kind of educated reform, in my view anyway, that in order to make change. There's no, you can't just like slap a plaster on it. And we know this from data around things like the pay gap. Mm. Even if you say there's an organization with a pay gap and they were like, okay, fine, from tomorrow, all the women earn the same amount as the men. So we're back to 50-50. If organizations that have done that in studies, within 3 years, the pay gap is back. Because it's structural. It's not about the fucking actual money. It's like, you need to change your attitude. You need to change the way that you do things in order to help individuals thrive based on their needs. You can't just be like, oh, we'll pay everyone. Oh, we'll just hire a black person.
No.
Doesn't fix it. No. And I think it's important as well. We talked about first and the pressure of first. And I heard, it was on an interview of something the other day that talked about, we don't talk about the second women. I mean, I think for a lot of the time we're not there yet, and that's why. But in some ways, what the point was is that the first women to do something is extremely, you know, heavy weight on that woman, but the second woman is still an incredible achievement, because what that means is the first woman wasn't a token. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is actually a trend. This is, okay, we're hiring women in this position. Oh, okay, we are whatever it is, you know, this is like established now. And the pressure on the second woman is actually still a lot, but that's progress.
Totally agree. What comes to mind is like, and I haven't got the correct data. I'm going to use the word data because we're using the word data a lot.
Yeah.
I can't Google it right now because I'm on, on the podcast.
We're busy.
I'm thinking of like the Emmys, and like when I think about Viola Davis, and I think she was the first in something, and she said on the stage, I'm the first. Right. Mm. And then now we've got other nominees such as Angela Bassett and what have you coming through. But when I think about Angela Bassett, who's an incredible actress, you know, she's 65. You know, we've been seeing her on screen for years. Why is she only getting her first nomination now? You know, well, first nomination, and if she wins, maybe second winner, you know, after Viola Davis. I mean, you know, it is the structure, because if there was more opportunities for her to showcase her talent, more some of the barriers being removed in regards to the judging system and the panels and that bias. I remember Sharon Stone, you know, this, we're not talking about music, it's definitely film. Yeah. But Sharon Stone saying, why is everybody saying, you know, Meryl Streep's the best actress when we got Viola Davis? Now, I love Meryl Streep. That's the only bad thing I'll ever say about Meryl Streep. She's dope. But why is everybody, she's saying it, fact. Why is everybody only talking about Meryl Streep as the best actress when we blatantly got Viola Davis? Can you not see other people other than her? And that's the point. It's about seeing people. It's about looking at people around you, seeing them for who they are, creating opportunities, creating equity, if we're talking about those who are more disadvantaged, and making a structure that is better. I agree with you. This music industry is, it just needs to be torn down. It's the worst. There's no regulation. People can do what they want, hire what they want, treat people how they want. Black people remain here, even though we've contributed probably the most in terms of our culture, our songwriting, our skills, our instrumentation, everything. We've given everything. We've influenced this industry like no other. Where are we? At the bottom. That doesn't even begin to make sense. You know, I was speaking to someone, we're going to probably do some work with him, hopefully, fingers crossed, with, you know, the person who was a songwriter with Elton John. We all love Elton John. Elton John's amazing. Penmanship's amazing. But his songwriter, his co-songwriter was a black man. Do you know who it is?
I actually don't, no.
Yeah, his name is Caleb Quay. He's Finley Quay's older brother. He used to write Elton John some of the biggest hits that he was next to him. Where are, and he's a reverend now in America somewhere. Where are our people? Do you understand what I'm saying? Where is the song? Where, you know, you've got Diane Warren. Why is he not next to Diane Warren, for crying out loud? You know, where is our people in the industry? We're not there because there's no access, no opportunity. It's almost like we're made to stay there. Don't get too far. Don't come too far up. That needs to change. And just like you said, holistically, we need to work together to break down those structures. Because right now, this music industry is built in a way that it doesn't, it just doesn't benefit hardly anyone apart from those who are at the top.
Yeah. I think a good sort of parallel example to what you're saying is about the, we've just seen the Brit Awards nominations, right? And for, yeah, this is a podcast, so everyone can't see Charisse's face, but you know, you can imagine. Yeah, just to, you know, give a music based example is similar, exactly the same. I mean, it's not that the film stuff is still relevant because it's all culture and creative industries. And also, as we said, this is just a reflection of society anyway. But we are seeing this in the music industry, just to specify, in case anyone was worried. And this is a really good example of, like, not addressing the structural issues and the unconscious bias and all that kind of stuff. When they're like, oh, we won't do best female artist and best male artist anymore because that's sexist. So we'll be really clever and we'll just do best artist. And then don't fucking nominate any women. And you're just like, like you said earlier, how are you not embarrassed? How did someone think at no point when they were like deciding who was going to be nominated and then they're putting together all their marketing materials, at what point did no one think, there's no women in this category? Or like, there's a lot of white people here. Do you know what I mean? Like, it did not occur to you.
Nothing to say. I saw it and I was in the middle of my burnout and I was like, you know what? I'm going to let Black Twitter handle that. I literally said, I'm going to let Black Twitter handle that. I've got no energy. I think this is where, like I said, we need to see people. You need to hear voices. I mean, I'm not sure who was on the voting panel or anything like that, but are they listening? Because this is not new. You know, last year people spoke out against this category. Last year, I was so embarrassed. You know, I was watching the Brits. Was it last year or the year before? And I was watching the Brits and I saw the pop R&B category. I don't even know what to say about that. But I was like, huh? And I remember looking at Twitter at the time. Everybody's like, question mark, pop R&B category. And I remember Dua Lipa, maybe she won it, but she was on tour. And she didn't even say pop R&B category. She said, thank you for, you know, letting me win the pop category. You know, she stood for something because that didn't make any sense. Now, I don't know why they're merging things together. Like, you got the pop R&B category. I think there was one, maybe one, and maybe there wasn't, but one nominee that was black. Everybody else was white. And I remember people saying, well, you got the Mobos for that. And I'm like, well, you know, people's going to say something, you know, there's always going to be a troll. But the point is, people aren't thinking, people aren't listening to our voice. And that's what it goes back to what I said right in the beginning. We're gaslighted. They don't listen to us. They don't want to hear about our lived experience. It's taken freaking data for us, Black Lives Music, to get to this point, data, but they're not listening to what people are saying. You know, they're not collating the general consensus. They're waiting for it's too late and then there's a shitstorm and you can't do anything. Mm. You need to listen to those you have around you. Pop R&B category Brits doesn't make any sense. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't, you know, having category that's gender neutral, you know, it might have sounded like a great idea, but then you realize actually, if we're going by data and all the men are still the most, all the investment are made in male acts or whatever, or they get all the best spots on the stages, therefore their streaming goes up or whatever. And that's, you have to put only those five men down. Well, you failed. That doesn't work. But somebody told you that was going to happen. I know people that have said this is going to affect women badly. Don't do this. So there are people speaking out before all of these decisions are made, but they're not being listened to. And that's what it comes down to, you know, listening to the people, listening to organizations that have the lived experience, really taking on what they're saying. And then you can make some changes. Don't manage it and make it for yourself and then expect it to come out all right. And when it doesn't, you're looking around twiddling your thumbs. No, people told you that's not going to work. So, yeah, I mean, that's as far as I'm going to go on it, to be honest.
I think that's why it's so frustrating. It's because, like you said, people are talking about this. There is people sharing their stories. We know this. It's not like, oh, no one saw that coming. Do you know what I mean? That's what's so infuriating about it. And like, but yeah, let's do gender neutral categories is like trying to put a plaster on something without actually acknowledging, like you said, the structural issues here. It's the same as like if you were advocating for gender neutral sports and you were like, oh, let's let women and men play in the same football team. We'd still have all men in the top teams because they get the training grounds, they get the investment.
Exactly.
Yeah, blah, blah. Regardless of the fact, you know, the biological differences. And it's the same exactly in music. It's like, okay, if you are going to do gender neutral categories, then you have to also acknowledge and address the structural issues. I can't remember off the top of my head the exact number, but there's this horrific statistic about festival lineups.
I was thinking the same thing. So if you're going to put like, I feel like getting it up. It was a terrible statistic. But if it's mainly men that are standing in front of all of these people, Glastonbury, whatnot, and they're getting all the streams at the end of it, what do you think is going to happen if you're going by data? You know?
I think I've got it written down here because I want everyone to know.
I think I can find it.
All right, Google. Yeah, get it. I want everyone to know. We're not exaggerating here. Music festival lineups, 13% female in 2022.
Come on, like, see? 13%.
And of those, and that's women. I don't know
about
if you broke
other
that down
yeah.
into black women or non-binary.
Let me help you. Come on. Let me help you. Like, you already know. And it's not, like, we're laughing about it, but it's not funny. It's actually, already know. You know, we're relegated to black, being a backing singer. We're relegated to bringing through the one. You know, if I be real, let me be an example. Bringing a couple of years ago is Arlo Parks. Now it's Kat Burns. Now it's the ones. We're still dealing with the ones and Beyonce. And even Beyonce has to fight tooth and nail to get to where she is. So that's what we're dealing with. Where's everyone else to make it up? And 13% is shocking. So if you've got the remaining maths being terrible, 87%. Being met, well, of course you've got an all males in the gender neutral category for whatever best artist or whatever it was. Of course it is. It's nonsense. If you said it, that would take you five minutes as a group to work out. But I don't understand.
That's what I understand. And what I don't understand about it is like we've talked about, there's all these women doing things, first women, there's breakthrough, fucking epic, incredible women doing amazing things.
Well, this is it, you know, I mean... You churn out the same, it's the machine of the music industry. It doesn't want to evolve. If it if this works, we're going to stick to it. And this is just being really optimistic right now, by the way. There's other nuances involved in this, you know, really, you know, but just on a basic lazy level, ultimately, if that works, we stick to it. Whilst George Ezra's got legs on him until he gets to a certain age, we'll stick with him and then we'll bring someone else through. It's just the same. Black people in the music industry, they're sticking into rap and R&B.
Yeah.
Let's not make her think. And that's why I love Kat Burns, because, you know, it's a nice, you know, it's a change. But you know what? There's a million Kat Burns out there. There's a million different people in different genres. And they make investment in or choose to make an investment in. And it's great if they even do that, because they only take that on when they've got a huge fan base and they've been making money themselves and they've got their publishing and everything's all right. Other than that, they're not even making the investment in Black people. That's my point.
Yeah.
You know, they churn out the same crap. And that's why the Brits always look the same. And that's why that person who made that stupid comment said, well, you've got the mobos for that. In a sense of, this is ours. This Brits is ours. That's not true.
It's not true.
But, I can't.
Well, in the music industry, it's not reflective of the music and who's bringing the music.
Absolutely.
And also, I think it's really important to acknowledge what you've just said, which is there's also this whole stereotypical thing. I mean, we could go off about the genres, but like, there are Black people in all genres of music.
Absolutely.
There are Black people playing classical music in orchestras. Like, it's
punk
not
music, Nova Twins, Joni Band, or whatever they're called. I can't remember. Joni. Like, there's different genres, you know, and we create genres. Electronic music, dance music, all of this stuff that we enjoy. And, you know, we're only seeing females going to number one with it now. White females, may I say. But wait a minute, black women have been killing a dance, DJing for years, producing for years, not being credited. And this is another thing. Don't, oh, please, not on and not credited.
I know. We don't have time.
We don't have time for the not credited. But you know what I'm saying.
Well,
just said the disparity is a joke. The disparity is a joke, and the Brits, just like you're saying, is a mirror of that. Unfortunately, I know there are good people behind the Brits, but they need to utilize the power that they have around them, which is those voices, the people that work with them and for them, saying, actually, you know what? Actually, that category is not a good idea. You know, listen to them.
Exactly. Listen. Just on that, we won't go into the big rant about not being credited because I've already used up a lot of time. But for anyone listening who wants to just look that up, I would definitely encourage you to learn a bit. I mean, we have a problem in the music industry of people not always being credited for their work in general, but there is definitely a kind of clear bias and extra discrimination and, well, racism, quite frankly, when it comes to not crediting Black creators for their music. And we talked about it, didn't we? Even Whitney Houston is singing on tracks that she is not named on. And I use her as a good example because she's someone who, you know, that one person pushed through. We all know and respect and love, she was an incredible singer, Whitney Houston. And it would be like, oh, even Beyonce is not always credited. She has to push through. It's not like there are these people who, because they have broken through and have been successful in the music industry, they also, if it happens to them, imagine what it's like for the people who aren't Whitney Houston and aren't Beyonce.
Yes, I will say
this. Go on.
Let me say, if there are any songwriters, artists listening, please, please, before you put pen to paper in the studio, make sure your stuff is straight. Make sure you get credited. If you're not credited, you will not get paid. If your name is not on the credit, as credited as a writer, you will not get paid. Make sure that your name is credited at least. Please, just get your stuff straight before you start putting pen to paper and singing. Make sure it's right. That's the only thing I'm going to say to it, because it's a horrible situation that we're looking at in that field.
That's a really good tip, and I'm glad that you said that, because exactly, like, we can be part of the solution in terms of that. You knowing your rights, which is obviously most of the time what I'm actually ranting about, and then enforcing your rights is really important. So I wanted to ask you, we've talked a lot about some of the challenges and some of the solutions, but I was wondering if I can ask you in a kind of more concise way, like, if, also we had this list of questions, we've just gone off on one, it's been great. We've touched on the themes, it's fine. But I did want to ask you this question in like a concise way about, and don't, you can repeat yourself because you've touched on and given some really good insights and reflections already. But if people are listening to this, and they're thinking about what can we do as individuals to better empower women in the music industry, in particular Black women and Black people, and just be more inclusive in general. And also, what can the industry do? Because I really, the reason I ask the question like that is because I do think we have power to influence change, but we've acknowledged that structural racism is there and those structural biases are there. And so actually the onus is not, as much as we feel that sense of responsibility, is not all on us. And there is stuff that the industry as a whole needs to change as well.
As an individual, I think, you know, okay, change will start from the top. That's the truth. If you're, you know, we as Black Lives in Music get to meet some amazing people who are leading record labels, different organisations, orchestras, who really want to see change. The best thing they've done is reach out to us, first of all. I said it just now in terms of the Brits. Listen to those who are around you. You know, you might not have all the solutions. Seek advice. This is why we're here. Black Lives in Music are here to help you get to where you need to get to. So I think it does, that change does start from the top. It involves you looking around at the way things are done, looking at the structures that are in place, changing your heart in terms of, you know, being brave enough and willing to make those different changes. So I think in short, the industry, we need change from the top. We need acknowledgement and change that this thing's shit. We need to change it. So right now, we're working with different record labels and different organisations on that very subject we talked about in terms of making sure people are credited correctly, all people are credited correctly. You know, we're working with different organisations in terms of making sure disabled people, Black disabled people are profiled a lot more in the industry. We're working with organisations to actually deal with actual racism of individuals. So that might mean, you know, training, that might mean, you know, treating your colleague in the orchestra kindly. We're working with organisations to actually look at the players and the hiring processes to make sure that they hire different orchestras, different people, different orchestras, different players, to ensure they increase and create more inclusivity and more diversity. You know, what we don't want is something that's separate, you know, a separate industry. There's a Black industry and or diverse industry, and then there's everything else. No, we want to see everybody come together. So that's what we're doing. But when we're talking about the actual people that actually are in charge of the music industry, they need to adopt what we have put in place, which is our anti-racism code of conduct, and really adopt that. We've put in mechanisms with that anti-racism code of conduct, which we're going to launch in May, to help the industry track, using data being king, track where they're progressing in terms of diversity, in terms of hiring practices, in terms of equity, in terms of making sure that Black people are going through the progressing within the industry and going through the pipeline, and that, or that a pipeline even exists in some places. So we are really working hard with the industry to make those changes, but we can't do it by ourselves. And we do need people who are willing. We can't knock on the door and say, and this isn't the case in most cases, all of the people come to us, but we can't be knocking the door and saying, you need to change, you need to change. You have to look within yourself, see what's happening, not laugh at the Brits because it went wrong for them. Actually, do I have the same problem in my organisation? Am I missing something? Is there a blind spot? Is that, why did Sally leave her position? She's been there for 25 years in the same role. Why did she leave? Because she's been in the same role for 25 years, you know? You know, we're seeing the exodus of Black women leave the music industry. According to the UK Music Diversity Report 2022, you know, Black women are leaving the music industry. Why is that? Is it because we're not, it doesn't make any sense for us that we're burnt out, like we discussed earlier on? You know, that we're having this job because we're taking on two jobs because we can't make ends meet just because we want to stay in the music industry and fulfill our passion? Or does it mean I pay my mortgage? These are the choices we have to make. Our childcare as women, you know, in general, but as Black women who are at entry level, who do not get to pass mid-management in most cases, you know, we've got huge childcare bills like everyone else. Does it make sense for us? No, that's why we're seeing that exodus. What are you going to do about it, music industry? Are you going to begin to promote Black women women in general. We're seeing women, white women being promoted. We are. It's looking 50-50 according to that report. So we're seeing progress on that. But black women, are you going to help in regards to childcare? Are you going to be more flexible for all women so we don't see this hemorrhaging of talent in general coming out of the music industry? And what about the live music industry? Is it going to become a safe place for women in general to work? Black women, I can't even see any black women there. Are we going to actually change that? How about that? Black women working in the live industry. We have black agencies. There are talented women trying to get through, can't get through the door. Are we going to see that change? You know, live industry, are you going to look around you and say, actually, we don't look diverse. What are we going to do about that? What can we do about that? And that's when you go to organisations like Black Lives in Music. Also, like I said, safety in live music is an issue as well. Women working, you know, I have people who email me and call me as a woman, because I advocate for black women, as a woman, they're white, saying they're being sexually harassed in the live industry. You know about it, live industry. What are you doing about it? And these are the structural changes that you spoke about that need to be broken down and start again. But I believe we can, like a puzzle, bit by bit. But again, the onus shouldn't be on one organisation. The onus, or UK Music, or any of the other organisations that have committed to this. It needs to be on the industry and the leaders of the industry. It starts from the top, putting things in place, seeing what programmes there are. Listen, if there was a piece of technology that said we can, well, there is a piece of technology that says you can boost your streaming and fake numbers, but we're not going to talk about that. If there's a piece of technology out there that said we can increase your income, increase your profit in the music industry, 2 seconds flat, they would go and buy it and go and get it and sort it out. Why, when it comes to diversity, there's an issue? Why does it take so long? And I'm going to end here. I truly believe that there is a, this is really controversial, but I don't care, I'm going to say it. There's some form of preservation taking place. Like, they don't want to let women have too much. They definitely don't want to let black people in the way they do. They want to keep straight white men in. And you see it in classical music, because we're playing the same songs from hundreds of years ago, but we've got this entire repertoire since, and we've not diversified it. Why? Why? Why are there still only white men at the top of the, you know, of the top of the music industry? Why? What is going on here? What bias, if there's a bias, what is taking place in this decision making? What are we going to do to change it? So, yeah, I think there's a lot of work to do. This is not going to be easy. Like breaking down our house and rebuilding it, it's going to take time. It's going to take years. But we can do it, because if we had to break down our house to build a beautiful multiplex building to earn a lot of money, we would do it. We know how to do it. So let's work together to make sure this industry is a better place.
I love it. That's such an articulate, insightful answer. And I just feel like you've got so much knowledge and understanding around the issues and the solutions. We're not sat here being like, what do we do about that? You know, oh, I don't know how we could help. But you've got all of this in your locker. Like, you've got the view of the landscape and these almost, you know, this whole, it's like a big strategy. It's like a puzzle piece. It's like you said, it's not one thing. It's like all these different things. If we pull it together, like you said, we can rebuild the house and it will be so much more fun, enjoyable for everyone, profitable for everyone. It's like people will, like you said, not be leaving their jobs. And it's like the investment of it is, there's so many reasons. There's so many reasons, from the human ethical reasons to the financial reasons of why. Which, like you said, it's a long game, but there are so many reasons why we could do it, and we can do it. It's doable. These aren't impossible things that you're suggesting. They're all very logical and sort of doable. Do you know what I mean? But it's like you said, it's about the people involved reflecting and thinking about how are you going to make that change and how does it apply to you. So thank you. That was a genuinely brilliant answer. And I hope that people listening will be inspired to share, so everybody is thinking about these things. And, you know, like you said, use the resources that's available and have these conversations and move things forward. So thank you so much. I have one last question, which I'm asking everybody. But before I ask that, I just wanted to say, is there anything that you want to add that you feel like you didn't get time to say? Or
I mean, I'm going to do a shameless plug, but, you know,
do it.
It's good. It's a good shameless plug. So we have our anti-racism code of conduct launching in May, and we would really like the industry to adopt it. If they're serious about diversity, if they're serious about anti-racism, everyone's made all these commitments years ago. If they're serious about anti-racism, please to adopt the anti-racism code of conduct. Now, this code of conduct is not a piece of paper that you put on the wall or stick on your hard drive. Let's be nice to everybody. No, there is mechanisms in place, reporting aspects to it as well. But like we said, we're talking about the solution. This is part of that solution, making sure that people feel safe, that they belong and protected in their place of work and in the music industry as freelancers in general as well. So please, let's take that on. And I didn't add, we have been listed as the top 50 most innovative companies in the world. But that's by Fast Company, which is a business and tech magazine in America, one of the biggest, if not the biggest tech magazine. So to be recognized for our work is great. That's an amazing achievement for all of us at Black Lives in Music. We are so grateful to be recognized. And it's, although it's just being listed, but you don't think little old me, little old Charisse, mum at home with her two kids, has one of the most innovative companies in the world. Meaning, women, we can do anything.
Yes. Stop. Yes, you can. Congratulations. Yes,
you can. Thank you.
So well earned. It's just nice to be, it's nice to be validated sometimes. You know, it's like we were talking earlier, sometimes it's easy to, we're hard on ourselves and you expect a lot from yourself. And so, yeah, fucking fair play, mate, because you work extremely hard and you're actually making meaningful change in the world. And if I could give you an award, I bloody would as well.
Thank you. Thank you, my dear. No, yeah, it's great. But, you know, speaking for all of the mums, all of the women working really hard and probably not getting recognised, you know, it means the world. Our little listed on as one of the most innovative companies led by a Black woman. Well, and a great team. So let's go. Yeah, that would be it.
Great. So just to wrap up with the last question, which I'm asking everybody, is to, you know, shine a light and celebrate women in the music industry. Can you tell us about a favorite? And I say a favorite because obviously it's too hard to pick the favorite female and inclusively any woman who is a music maker of all time ever and somebody in the present day that you're appreciating. And you could maybe tell us a bit about why those are your choices.
So that's really hard because I could reel off a list. Like, to be honest, my favorite singer, and she's not even the best singer, is Rihanna, but I'm not going to use this. It would be Mary J. Blige. I remember looking at her and we, you know, got my Black Music magazine, I think it was called, I can't remember what it's called. It may be Jet or one of those Black American magazines. And it's the only way at that time that we could actually get Black music. So get to know what's going on. It would be shown really late at night, stay up at 2 o'clock in the morning, we'd see it on MTV. There was no radio. You know, we'd have to get CDs and spend a lot of money. So as a teenager, just having that magazine, just like everybody else, but a Black one, was quite rare at those days, showing my age. But it was Mary J. Blige, and I remember looking at her and I could see me. I could see her swag. I see it like she was a woman, but she loved hip hop. She was able to express herself in her music, and it was just such a power and a passion. And I saw her, I saw me in her, her in me, and I just resonated with her music. And then I've seen her evolve and you know, she's 50 plus now, and she's as beautiful as she was then. And I just think, and her music is just as powerful. So for me as an artist, she was a pioneer. She was seen as, she's the queen of hip hop soul, they used to call her. And she was a pioneer in that. She used to sing over hip hop tracks. And she is the pioneer of what we have today in terms of hip hop and R&B put together. So that would be my person. I hope I've done her some justice. But Mary, you are truly the queen. I salute you. And, you know, Mary, I know you feel that, and we all feel there was a million queens before Mary, but she's mine. So that's it.
I love it so much. And it was such a moving answer because, like you said, about seeing her and seeing yourself in her, like a real inspiration. And that's the thing about when we go back to what we were saying earlier about the first Black woman doing this, is that's what that means. That's what that means when you see that woman, that Black woman on the stage, or the woman of color on the stage, and you're just like, that's, oh, someone like me can do that, and that inspiration. So it was a really lovely answer. Thank you for sharing. And yeah, absolute respect for that woman. She's a total fucking badass.
Yeah, she really is. But yeah, we do good. But thank you so much for this time. Thank you for allowing me to be vulnerable. It's rare. I've already gone back into my shell, if you can tell. Trying to defend why I was vulnerable, guys. You know, it's a moment, guys. You got me. But no, I mean, it's real. You know, it's very real. But
We're all working on that balance, isn't it? Of like being vulnerable and authentic, and our kind of need. And sometimes, you know, even that, like, don't. I think we almost like bully ourselves a little bit, that it's like, even you have to be this, you have to be that. And it's like, but sometimes you do have to be strong and guarded to get through the day. And so, yeah, it's a challenge to be vulnerable and take those walls down at the appropriate moments when you feel safe. And I have to say, I've lured you into a false sense of security because you feel like it's just me and you, but other people will genuinely hear this.
Well, listen, at least you're hearing it from someone who, you know what, if you're going through, I responded because I heard other people going through the same thing I did. So that means it's good to share, you know.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hayley. Thank you for your time. Anyway. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, please like, share and subscribe.